The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, here we are. Hang on one second. I'm going to do one more thing here, and I will be, it has been quite a day. I went to visit Jordan in the hospital today, just to give you a quick update. He's being taken very, very good care of. He did have another stroke episode. In fact, he had several small strokes, and he's very lucid. He's okay. It didn't impair his speech or anything else that I can see, and I spent quite a bit of time with him. But we're hoping to get him into a full care and rehab facility in the next few days, and with any luck, he will come back to full function. He wants to do radio right now. He said, I'm going to take a nap, and then when I wake up, I'll be ready for the radio program. I think he thought we were going to do a radio program tonight. I'm not sure. I tried to track him as best I could, but he has had several small additional strokes. That's about five altogether now, and he's doing as well as can be expected. I think there's a good chance he can make it back. I'm optimistic, and I know that he would say to please tell everyone hello, so I'm doing that even without him asking it because I know Jordan. And he's very much appreciative of your thoughts and your prayers, and that's the situation with Jordan Maxwell. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that program last night on AI. It was stunning. To put it mildly, it's there, and I hope you are all able to pull that up and look at it and share it. Really important. So here we are on Friday, and we're going to do part two tonight on one of the most remarkable stories I have ever heard. And I think many of you share that belief, that opinion. The story of Marianne Shenefield, and she is, without question, one of the most unknown, marvelously enigmatic people that I've ever heard about. It's a story that you just don't come across very often. And I believe James is standing by. Are you there, James?
Yes, I am. How are you? Good evening.
How am I? crazy. Yeah. I wish there were, you know, another 20 hours in the day and I might have a chance. It's one of those things. James Martinez is back with us. James knew Mary Ann. And for those of you who are looking forward to this and have been looking forward to it, here is part two tonight. He knew her very, very well. And it is a story that part one is well worth listening to. And we're going to add part two to it tonight. Now, you spent the last 13 years of Mary Ann's life with her, helping her, working with her, talking with her, arranging interviews and conversations for her with some of the biggest intellects on the planet. It's a remarkable life you lived with Mary Ann, helping her. You did so much. And I don't know where you'd like to start with part two. We were just getting into some of the most eclectic material that I have ever explored on this program and all the years we've been doing it. Do you want to do something? Let's do this. For our first-time listeners tonight, if you would, just give us a little summary about Mary Ann. Just wing it. Who was she?
Okay. Mary Ann Shenefield was one of the first abduction cases whereby during the abduction she was modified, essentially. Altered. Her biology was altered. Her brain was altered. And ultimately, her vision was altered. This took place in the 50s, and it was one of the first of the biggest cases out there, like Betty Hill. Betty Hill took most of the limelight at that time in the 50s. And Mary Ann Shenefield was one of the women on the East Coast back there, because there was a lot of activity in Massachusetts in the 50s with regard to seeing UFOs. And her first contact was at 11 years old when she was playing in a field. And she was a farming girl, and she was playing in the field. And, quote-unquote, the car from heaven came down and landed in front of her. And that was her first interactive experience with small beings that looked like Asians with suits on, like metallic suits on. That was the first experience of her. Then the second one came many years later when, during the interim, when the next interface happened, the change in the communication between the particular species, because there were different species, and neither of them fit the standard what we knew back then as abduction case. These are more like contactee cases where there was information exchanged. So these took place in the 50s, and she was very, very young. And it was not one of the most well-known cases because of her, basically, I think she was very cognizant of how people perceived her, how she looked, what it was like to be blind, because she lost her vision over a period of time and then became somewhat of an anomaly to all her doctors and psychiatrists that couldn't understand how she was functioning in this new reality that she was in.
James, excuse me, do we think that her blindness was connected to the contact?
Yeah, yes. The second one, she told me that after she had the second contact, they placed their hand on her head. And when they did that, she said something happened. She couldn't describe it, but it didn't happen that immediately. But she just knew when they made contact with the hand on the head that things were going to be different for her. She didn't discover that till later, though, because she's very terrified as a young child, because there was nobody at that time to talk about any of this. So it was very secretive. You just couldn't go around and say this happened. I don't think people can imagine what it's like, what it'd be like to live in 50s
talk about
right now.
Loneliness and isolation for a child. Doesn't get any more intense than that. I think, that, and I don't really, it's apples and oranges, but Mary Ann's case, to me, after speaking with you for the couple of hours we've covered this story up to this point, was much more phenomenal, fantastic, incredible. Because let me say this just to the audience. What happened to Mary Ann, apparently, was that when they put the hand on her head, and then, didn't they put another hand on her hand or something? Wasn't there a second hand?
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I remembered. All right. When they put her into that state and touched her on the head and her hand, they apparently gave her a mind advance that put her essentially, apparently, on a near par with how their brains work and how they think.
Precisely.
Exactly. And how they perceive reality. They gifted mm-hmm. her with their own intellectual consciousness and subconsciousness. Now think about that. That's wild.
Yeah, there are things that I forgot to mention when I spoke to you last about this case, is because over time, as I got to know her, I found out how much influence she had behind the scenes in that kind of investigative field, because it wasn't until three or four years into knowing her that I found out that she said, you know, Close Encounters is about me. And I said, well, what do you mean it's about you? And he said, well, did you watch it closely? And have you heard of what I've been telling you this entire time? Sound, tone, color. If you watch that movie, the pinnacle of the movie is the interface where they use the da-da-da-da, and they use sound and color in the background. She goes, and she would tell me, where do you think they got that from? Because they found out what the real language is.
It's energetic frequencies, sound, lights, colors, just really
tone.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
Tone. Somebody sent me again a whole page full of color graphs and color charts showing how colors relate to our reality. And it was very interesting, and I immediately tied it to Marianne. I tell you honestly, of all the people I've interviewed, and I've had some phenomenal good luck and great fortune, that's one that I really feel I missed out on, and I don't like that feeling. I wish I could have spoken to that woman. She and James had a very unusual relationship for all those last 13 years. Tell our listeners what you primarily were doing for her, one of the main things you did for her, i.e. lining up contacts and discussions with some of the most remarkable people of our times.
Yeah, one of the things, I mean, first she had to thoroughly examine me for like a year or two, looking through my entire energy field, learning who I was, learning where I came from, learning where my genetics are from. All of that took place for a long period of time, because I initially started talking to her a couple times a week and then eventually turned to almost every single day. And then after I had earned some trust and learned to listen to what she was saying, because it was, I mean, I had to learn what she was saying based upon interpreting what she is seeing. So it was very difficult to take what she's seeing, and then she's got to say that in language to me and then pass it on to me, and then I've got to mirror and match that as close as I can, because she could see, if she told me to visualize a cube, she could tell me when I was visualizing with 100% perception. Like if she told you to visualize an apple, because most people's imaginations are not acute at all. The power of imagination has been very dwindled almost down to nothing. But she asked you to visualize an apple, and she said, then she'd lead you with English language, and then in the labyrinth of your mind, you would take those pictures that they evoke, and then you start visualizing it. Then she'd tell you to describe it, and then she'd cut you off. And right when she'd cut you off, she knew that that picture was fixed at that point. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn all that back and forth for a long period of time before we started interacting with her clients. And since I talked to you last, I looked into, made some phone calls into the past, and found out that yes, there were people spying on us, and yes, it was published in the book, and yes, I contacted the author, and yes, one of the people that we were dealing with as our client, we made him really wealthy and really famous. So I have to shoot that out there, because as I described, the language that we were using to interface with clients, it evokes these, I remember deeply the activity that we took place when we had another person on the phone. I mean, one of the interesting things that Marianne would have liked about you is that you are in acoustic space and you're used to listening. It's very important. Often if you were sitting in front of her or you're on the phone with her, she would ask you to amplify your sensory body a little bit more. And instead of talking to me with your eyes open, talk with them closed for a while, then cover them up, blindfold yourself while you're talking to her so that, she could see the variation of, perceptual balance. On how, if your ears are amplified, if your eyes are shut. She looked at all these different sensory relationships when she was talking to someone, including myself. So she would definitely, if she was going to be interviewed by you, she'd want to talk to you first and find out who you've been talking to, because she could see the residue of people that you could talk to throughout the day, because most people are forgetting, because they're limited in their own perceptions, that they're surrounded by electricity and residue from sometimes 24 hours ago of a conversation they had with somebody. So we're talking with clients. Part of what her job was to do was to go into the person's field, auric field, which is where all the information is about your health, about who you're talking to, what you're doing, your past, the probable futures, and clean out that. That was a lot of her job, was going in and collecting the debris, of unnecessary debris in the person's energy field before she even got to doing anything that they were asking her to do, which could be to remote view into a cell or into a physical part of the body. She was like a one of those diagnosis machines where they what do they call them? The
MRI.
She was an MRI, so she could see in the body that well. And she spent a lot of time working on people's physical bodies before she got into everything else, because there was in the extraterrestrial language that she was taught, it had a definite format before beginning anything. In other words,
I understand. She had to clean the extraneous noises away, frequencies, resonances, to make clarity much more accessible. Clarity of thought, clarity of conversation. Yeah, I understand. Remarkable. James Martinez actually was talking to as close to an ET as we're going to get on this planet until they land and start walking amongst us, which I frankly think they already are. But he had the incredible fortune to talk to this woman whose brain had been, we'll just say, enhanced, I mean, dramatically, but not just enhanced in our own paradigm of human thought, but enhanced in the sense that she was given an entirely different set, a different database of consciousness, of thought, of mental activity, that being pretty much a duplicate, a clone of an ET mind. Now, that's quite a load to carry around. And I do think that, honestly, that, and we did discuss this a little bit, but the blindness, I think, was a result of that. That would be my guess. I'm not there. Of course, but it was too much, and maybe something got fried, maybe something got burned out, or maybe the lesson was you don't need to see, you need to listen, and you need to process, and you'll hear it all. I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of remains a mystery, but she was, her perceptual bandwidth was extended drastically. I mean, most people don't realize that we are electrical editing machines, that we're getting an enormous amount of information coming at us, and we're editing most of it out. We have a very small amount of information that's coming through our sensory awareness. She had way more, so much so that she had tremendous physiological problems and effects from lack of sleep.
How could you sleep yeah. with a mind like that? Seriously, I understand.
Yeah. So yeah. she had a psychiatrist and was on prescription meds to even almost kind of knock herself out just so her body could recover, because she was not physically in good health when I met her face to face, because of all the anxiety, a lot of it due to her own doing, smoking being one of them. She smoked like crazy.
She was trying to anesthetize herself.
Yeah, exactly. She was just hanging on, basically, but didn't want to say that because there was so much anxiety that she was dealing with. But she just, the most important part, and one of the things I wanted to say, because I was going to do it in the form of a book or something later on, but I don't mind doing it at this point because of where we're at as a planet and everything else going on. But she was the pivotal point at the end of Operation Mind Control Volume 2. The quote that we put in there at the end of the book that came from her, was inspired by her. And that had to do with Dinah Primus's poem about the only war that matters is the war against the imagination, and all other wars are subsumed in it, and there is no way out of the spiritual battle. And that was inspired by her, because she said that Operation Mind Control really was not just the exposure of MK Ultra and all the behavior modification tools that were used for political purposes all over the world.
It wasn't just about evil things.
It was about liberating the human condition, liberating the mind, and maintaining cognitive liberty, and ultimately the control of our own souls and destiny. That's what he wanted. And when the Operation Mind Control, the secondary edition of it, the part where we chronicled abduction as it relates to ritual abuse and the patterns that exist between those two phenomena, she was the one that brought it all home, because she explained to us who was being abducted, because they were leaving a almost an electromagnetic imprint on a person that they were dealing with. Because there's a lot of people that were post-suggested into phenomena that was completely faked. And she noticed that. She knew about that, but she was afraid about talking about that on the telephone at that point.
Wow. All right. Operation Mind Control, a book by Walter Boart, B-O-W-A-R-T. Walter Boart, a remarkable man in his own right. This poor soul, Marianne, was trying and to deal with something that was, I didn't talk to her, you did, but is overwhelming an understatement, perhaps? I mean, this had to be so huge. Yeah.
She had an enormous amount. She had a very difficult personal life. Went through a couple marriages, adopted a child, has tremendous physical problems. About a year ago, I got a call from a director doing a documentary on Andrea Perharch, and we found each other. I was in Los Angeles at that point, and he said, "Oh, so you're the one that knows Marianne Shenifield?" I said, "Yeah, if you're doing a documentary on Perharch, you better talk to her, because they were buddies. That was his secret weapon to his everything that he was doing." And he goes, "Well, she says I can't come see her." And she doesn't want to see anybody, because she doesn't want you to see her, what she looks like, because she had her leg amputated. And she would, she was barely interested in talking to him at all. And he got a little bit of information out of her, but she suffered enormously through this whole thing. It was very frustrating for her to go through what she did. But she left me with a lot of information, and a couple other people with information about the true language of the extraterrestrials, which is quite different than aliens. An extraterrestrial language is different than an alien language. They operate on two separate things, because she always wanted to clarify that, because she said, I don't want to be talking to the aliens. I want to be talking to the extraterrestrials. And that the difference between the two is vast, because in her understanding, extraterrestrials can be in a body and out of a body, can function just both the same, and they can, it defies time and space, and they can be anywhere at any moment, and are on a completely different level. And the language that she was taught, the first major secret, it was a secret back then, not too much now, but the T-bar is in the brain, she called it the T-bar. And the T-bar, it exists when she looks at somebody's brain, when she sees all the electrical activity of the brain, inside the very center of it, there's a T. She said it looks like a T, and she called it a T-bar, and it's always in the same color. She looks like, it says it's in a dark blue, and it looks like a capital T, or it looks like a cross, the Holy Cross, or it looks like an Ankh. She said,
sure,
it's this,
an Ankh, yeah.
Yes, this thing inside is a very important mechanism. She said this would be the, if there were an acupuncturist, if I were to talk to an acupuncturist and say, this point in the body is the center and connective point to all the other points, acupuncture points in the body, because there's hundreds of them. That's the seat right there of power. And she said, once you know what that is, in relation to your own godhood and that relationship between the extraterrestrials, not the ones, not the aliens, not the ones that are coming in meat sack bodies, but the ones that can go in and out of both. So that's the beginning place of extraterrestrial languages. That's the centrifuge of the whole thing.
Got it. Centrifuge, good word. Okay, now, is this a group of ETs that she was able to further identify as to where they come from, what their job is? Are they interdimensional, or are they primarily of this dimension, or can they go back and forth? Did she, we know there are probably limitless, countless numbers of civilizations out there, but this one, did she say, yes, this one was from Antares, or this one was from Aldebaran,
no, she didn't,
whatever.
She knew that there were species from other places, but this one, she could never figure out where they're from. She said that she mentioned to me they're out of time. They've been here forever.
Out of time. I like. Okay,
they're built upon the components, the building blocks of the universe. Their language is tied into that.
Wow.
Spiral dynamics, the spiral that you see in nature is part of that language.
Okay. What about her life did you note that she enjoyed?
She liked meeting new people. She really liked meeting new people if it was in the right context, because she wanted to be able to look at them, to examine them. She spent a lot of time. She could talk to you for 3 hours and say nothing and talk about baseball or anything that you wanted. But while she was talking to you, she could see what was really
total
on
analysis. I understand.
Oh, complete. Yeah, you can't. Yeah. I mean, if you were talking on the radio here, it would be very interesting for her, because she could not only look at you, but look at the people that were listening, if they're in the same room, or who was focused more on your voice, or all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. They'll pick up tons of information that you could just visually see.
Sometime, we need to have you come on, and if you can play a recording of her voice, that would be fun to hear. Maybe you can come up with something in the second hour tonight. Just, you know, a couple minutes, whatever. I'd like to hear her voice.
I wish I had it. I wish I had it, and I've looked for it. I wish I had, somebody must have it somewhere. I've looked into some sources of that. I know somebody has her on film. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get that or not. She had rather a nasty divorce, and you know what kind of effects those have on people. So
sure.
I don't know if I'll be able to get it.
Well, if anyone's listening and knows anything about this, maybe they can reach out to James. You can certainly get him through me, and I'll be happy to pass it along. That poor woman trying to live life as a blind human with, I'm just going to keep this simple, with an ET or a partial ET brain reconfiguration, enhancement, that's an impossible task. There was no way she could not have grief. There was no way she could not suffer. I can't imagine it. It's too difficult.
She wanted contact all the time. I mean, she was kind of lonely in a certain sense. I could tell that in a certain sense, because while she wanted to be flamboyant, she was like a highly socialized person that no longer could be socialized anymore because of her concern about other people's perceptions and answering people's questions. Because it was difficult to have a conversation with her because you can't BS with her. So, you know,
this is
communication means nothing to her. Small talk doesn't mean anything to her. She'd rather get right to the point of whatever's on your mind.
That speaks very highly of you. I mean, I don't think I'd have any trouble speaking with her at all either. I think it would be just a remarkable experience. Were you aware of her? I'm to keep this as pedestrian as I can. Were you aware of her rummaging around and analyzing and surveilling your mind and your thoughts when you were talking to her? There were several things going on, obviously, not just that.
Yes, because I could feel it. And one of the things, I was just letting her talk in the beginning, and she wasn't doing anything in terms of psychokinesis with me at all for 6 months. And then all of a sudden that changed by a random phone call that I got right early in the morning, got up, answered the phone, and she said it was some urgent matter she brought up. And she goes, I need to borrow you. Are you willing to do this task with me? I said, just listen to what I'm about to tell you. I'm going to give you instructions on what to do. And at that time, when I was early 20s, I just got out of college. I'd been on the top track and field athletes in the U.S. I had a ton of energy. I didn't have much patience. I just wanted to get the fuck out of it. So I had a lot of time, problems like relaxing, preparing to do something with her, because you really have to alter states to do something correctly with her. You can't just stand there. You have to really alter states and concentrate. So one time when she called through, I could feel for the first time what she did to my body. All my hair stood up. I could feel like my blood pressure changed, and she was very concerned that I wasn't going to pass out or something like that. She said, are you okay? I'm just turning it up a little bit. Can you feel it? And I said, yeah, I can feel it. How are you doing that? I knew she had gifts, but when you're doing that type of stuff, then the whole universe changed for me at that moment, because then I knew she knew way more than she had told me thus far. And I knew that her psychokinesis was real and she could alter somebody's energy field. And, you know, when you change the heat in a room, 1, 2, 3, 4 degrees, it changes all the perception in the room as well. So she was very careful how much she turned the channels. So when I was interfacing with her, my role with her when I was working with her was basically like a battery pack of sorts. Because when she initially examined me, and she didn't tell me this, when she saw that my T-bar, it had a specific frequency and color and shade, which she hadn't seen before. And she said, this is unique about you, and you can do this, 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 and this. And when I was told that, it didn't mean anything, because I'd never done any of that stuff or didn't even know it existed. But this is why I was on the phone with her for so many years, is because I was like a backup battery pack to use for experiments in I guess people, the easiest way to say it would be psychic warfare. But it wasn't warfare per se. It was manipulating space by consent. Sometimes not by consent if they're doing something bad, but most of it was by consent. And that was the turning point for me when she did that on the phone that morning. I'll never forget it. I don't even know what to say, because it was like a lightning bolt coming through the phone. My whole body could feel it. I could feel the whole thing. Blood pressure changed. All my hair. It's like I got electrocuted.
She
3,000 miles away in Massachusetts.
I understand. She didn't need to have you on the phone. She was in
no,
your
she
head.
Didn't need to. She used me as a backup, extra energy.
Really? So she borrowed some energy from you. How interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
that was my purpose.
James, what kind of energy? How would you describe it? What was she borrowing? What was she using?
She said the only way you would get it, JC, or James, or she had all these nicknames for me, was it's a kind of deep sea blue, Tesla blue. She told me that's what the color is. And then that translated to me, okay, so that's kind of explosive. And she goes, yeah. Said, have you ever had stuff explode around you? And I had, but I never attributed it to that, of course, because I had had that happen periodically. But I'd always blew it off as something else, you know, or locally around me. I had dishes shatter or explode, or things like that happened, or the lights would go out or something like that. So she goes, that's where it's coming from. I said, you never paid attention to it. And I said, no, I didn't at all. So that's, and it was because of that initially that I had this long relationship with her, and she started to teach me the language of hyperspace. And this was the initial beginnings of that relationship. I brought Walter Boward in later, because she knew about the mind control. She knew about that. She knew it was totally real. And when I introduced Walter Boward to Marianne, that was, I wish I could have taped that. And that phone call, I wish I could have taped. Because we were all on a conference call, and he started to use language that in NLP they refer to as creating a transderivational search, which forces the person listening to go inward and go into their recall and remember things and then describe them. And you started doing that with over the phone and using microescalation to get closer and closer and closer to the detailed memory of the contact that took place. That the moment the interface of the extraterrestrial was touching her, basically. And they got into a huge, philosophical debate. And the debate, when I was on the phone, because I was like, wait a minute, I was refereeing. I thought, you two aren't supposed to be yelling at each other right now. So they were debating, and he was trying to...
When you say
to,
they, you say, we're talking about she and...
Walter Boward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't disbelieve her. He just wanted to know how she processed her experience, what perceptual mechanisms were magnified and which ones were thrown to the side, and what her coping mechanism was of this huge change that happened. Because he was very interested in behavior modification for the benefit of humanity, not the bad stuff, but the good stuff. So he wanted to learn her process. So I had already learned the language of hyperspace from her by doing it with clients that she got. I was just called in on the phone for those clients. He wanted to learn the language for himself to see if it was possible, if he could do anything. So they spent hours and hours and hours talking to each other. He was amazed by her. Totally amazed. This was right at the point when he started getting sick, and she knew he was sick. She knew he was very sick and told him that. And it was right at the beginning when he started having medical problems, and she identified it way early, because he had a a very large tumor in the lower colon, which she identified and told him. So the teacher became the student, the student became the teacher, and then we'd go back and forth because he was they were doing a lot of exchanges of information on what John Mack had been relaying with all the abductions that were going on in his eyes, because at that point, John Mack, Boer, myself, her, were all talking to each other. And just the differentiation between faked abductions and real ones and real contactees were quite different. And all those discussions and discoveries were taking place because he was the thing that she contributed most to that book, which was updated in the sense that all the UFO abductions were classified in terms of its relationship to ritual abuse. And all the metaphor of ritual abuse is very similar to the metaphor of the abductions that were for finding. And Marianne clarified to us, well, I can see the real ones and not the real ones. And I know that there's this dark side doing this, this, and this. And so we were well aware of it in the very beginning, how they were going to shape culture to then proceed to tell us who the extraterrestrials are, what they're doing. The whole thing's going on right now. We were surmising the patterns that would take place in the future as all this information and data was being collected, basically, by her, because she spent enormous amounts of time with Betty Hill talking to her as well.
Okay, so to, I think, bring this into a little tighter focus, that she knew, and Walter knew, and you knew, that we were headed toward a very depraved and evil time on this planet. Pedophilia, satanic rituals, all the rest of it. Is that correct?
It's correct, but it leads ultimately to the return of our own Godhead, a return to our own willingness to take responsibility for our body, mind, and soul. That's what it leads to.
Wow. That's and we got a culture now. We have a culture now where it's a victim culture. It's not my fault. They're all victims. Well, not all. Most.
Right. They
I'm
want
a victim.
To assume responsibility.
They,
won't,
they will
for
not
the
assume
reality.
Anything. No.
No.
And it just drives me nuts. It must have driven you nuts, too. I mean, just to watch.
We saw how it was being shaped and prepared that way.
Oh, please.
And
thank you for saying that. It was all, let me just say this, excuse me. Dear friends, this was all shaped by abject evil long ago. There is good and there is evil in this universe, in this galaxy, in this solar system. And it controls where we are and where we have been taken. They have designed all of this. And I don't know how to oppose it. I don't know how to neutralize it. I don't know what the antidote is, except we must learn and rediscover what taking responsibility for our actions is all about. Go ahead, James.
And creating our realities as well.
Yes.
She said, yes, this is going to be a dark time. We all knew that, but ultimately, she always emphasized to me, you know, because I went through all sorts of problems knowing her, as everybody does in life. And she said, ultimately, this is the return to the Godhead, where we have to take back our relationship to the Godhead, and that we're co-creators, and we're responsible for our thought forms, and we're responsible for our creations, and we have to take that into account first. Because, you know, during my kind of training or learning with her, you know, if I call in and how was your day, and I start bitching about something, and this happened to me, or this happened to me, or this happened, she wouldn't give me an inch ever. She'd, well, why did you create that? Why are you inviting these realities into your world? Why are you doing this? You have to take responsibility and participating for doing this and this. And you need to start using a proper, where's your visualization? This is why that quote was put in the end of Operation Mind Tool, because people don't use their own imaginations. They're bombarded with imagery of other people's imaginations, which isn't even real. So
no,
people have
I like the word vision, other people's vision. Very few people have vision anymore. They just don't. They're not creative. They don't know how to... the idea of constructing something on a higher level or any level is foreign to people now because they're always staring at a screen. They're reacting to various stimuli.
Yes.
That's what they do.
Our senses have been hijacked. She knew.
Correct.
We all knew that.
Yeah.
We knew that they were going to insert the resonating interval, and we explained to Marianne what that was. That's the beat between the five senses. They were going to inject something in that that would ultimately interfere with all the thought process, and that is the fingers to the keyboard and the visual aspect of keyboard, because most of our time is spent before screens now.
It's one of the most insidious addictions I've ever seen. It is the most insidious addiction. Now, if she were here now, none of this would be surprising. It's not surprising to you. You saw it coming. The diabolical sophistication of it might be of note. I won't say a surprise, but it does amaze me. These bastards have every angle covered, it seems like, with this spike protein, what they're doing. This is mass genocide. There's no question about it. Will it stop? Will it be stopped? I don't know. Do they have an antidote for their own horrific creations? Yes. We're not going to get it unless somebody can discover it on their own. You don't just simply reverse DNA programming in somebody. You put DNA therapy into them, it's going to change their genetics. You can't reverse that. It's not easy. They have a way to do it, or they would never have released this. That's my feeling. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think they're going to take the chance. They have an agenda here, and the agenda is to get rid of most people. And it's clear as day right now. You probably, again, are not surprised by this, and I don't think Marianne would have been, nor Walter.
No, they knew. I consider them lucky because they got out early, but they would, if I could, I know what Marianne would be doing right now if she were alive. I know there would be a team of people assembled, and they would be modifying behavior through hyperspace. I can say it because that's exactly the truth, because that is ultimately what needs to be happening. That's what she would be doing if she were alive right now. I know it, because she could see, and she warned me way back in the early 90s when the amount of electrical pollution from devices was happening, because everybody remembers the first attachment to the body was the pager.
Oh yeah.
And that changed everything in a person. I saw it
began happen. It began the addiction. Sure.
Began, yeah. That was the micro-escalation to what we have now, is the TV, the movie theater, the telephone, the keyboard, the everything in one system attached to the body.
James,
so we saw and mapped it all out.
Go ahead. You mapped it out. Are we, as a species, we're clearly in regression. Are we going to survive this in any meaningful manner? Will there be enough of us left that get through this to somehow reestablish and do what she was suggesting, rediscover the Godhead and reunite with it? There have to be some of us left.
Unfortunately, and most people would agree, until the pain and the anguish is enough, we don't change. That's stupid.
What a tragedy.
That's our history. Well, our history, so.
And it goes all the way back. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
Why haven't we advanced? Have we been held back? Why haven't we learned?
Yeah, we,
all of us, as a species, some of us have learned. But something has held us back, and I think that's the dark side. That's the satanic evil. Somehow,
she
great power.
She mentioned to me that the bandwidth of humans has been stuck at that certain frequency for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, I just happen to have mine changed and I can see it. But I said, that doesn't have to stay that way. And people really need to take their power back. I know that's a small statement with massive connotations, but taking your power back means taking your cognitive liberty, standing up for yourself. I mean, all these things that are constantly or should be constantly repeated on a daily basis to not just America, but the world. And that means taking back your Godhead back as well. So she would be on the case in the fight, for sure. For sure. And well, probably right. would be more secret about it than ever before. That's what I think. Mm-hmm.
Good to hear. Not surprised to me, but good to hear. All right, hold on a minute. James Martinez and I will be back after the top of the hour. Another hour to discuss Marianne and her remarkable life. And I guess you could call it gifts. She might not agree, but she was given something very special. We will be back. Hold on.